The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it. You must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks a contested catch is a good way to get bit. That's Lenny. I swear he doesn't bite. I'm Mina, and I am joined by someone who maybe bites, Dominique Foxworth. Welcome back.
Lenny doesn't bite anymore? Like, at one point.
Listen, I've never seen him break skin.
Okay. Okay. I didn't realize that was the line.
I wonder if that's a line in, like, professional, like UFC, like you break skin or so. I don't know. Anyways, whatever. That's a weird tangent. I'm sorry. Dominique, the host of the Dominique Foxworth Show, which you guys should check out as well, on a million ESPN programs, including this one. How you doing, bud?
Great. I'm happy to be here. It's some programs make me tired. This one gives me wings. Thank you for having me on.
You're going to be, well, I was going to say you're like Derrick Henry and you get more energy as it goes on, but I don't really think that's the case anymore.
That's an insult now. Man. Derrick Henry looked really rough last night.
Let's start with the other game, because the other game was like the more surprising outcome. I think everybody expected the Bills to have their way with the Titans. There were some interesting things in that game, and I think definitely some factors that will affect next week, which I'll talk about, I think, later this week, the Bills Miami game, which now suddenly has a ton of juice. But the Eagles game, Dominique, like, I feel like it's not, I don't want to say it changed the landscape of the NFC necessarily, but for me it kind of did, not because I necessarily expect that exact performance from Jalen Hurts going forward, because I don't think that's going to happen, but I now know that he's capable of it.
Right. Yeah, I think it'd be foolish to expect it going forward, but it's a new high watermark for him against a very good defense, or at least what I thought was a very good defense. I mean, I guess shutting down Aaron Rodgers is no longer what it used to be. So I guess that we're blaming Aaron Rodgers for that game. But I mean, I guess generally it's a good team. And what I saw from Jalen Hurts in particular that I thought was important was his ability to pick apart zone defenses, which he really struggled with in the past, and also his ability to play from inside the pocket. If you look at his numbers from last year, they take a steep dive against zone and from inside the pocket. That's what he did this whole game. He sat in the pocket, or most of the game, he sat in the pocket and picked apart the zone. That matters a lot, particularly for athletic quarterbacks or dual threat guys, because no one can really run man, true man coverage against a dual threat running back, or excuse me, dual threat quarterback, because I didn't mean that. I take it back. I'm
okay,
sorry.
Okay, Lamar Pullian. All right.
I'm sorry.
Keep going. Zone.
Yeah.
You gotta play zone.
Right. So that everyone can have their eyes back on the quarterback when he runs out of the pocket. And Jalen Hurts is forcing them to make a decision. I guess the next move is to show how he can play against the blitz, because the Vikings didn't do a whole lot of that.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was very surprised by the Vikings' defensive plan in this. I mean, obviously they were going to play a ton of zone. To your point, no one's going to play a ton of man against Jalen Hurts, who also, to your point, obviously he's a quarterback. He was great, but he would be, I mean, he runs like a running back. Like, in this game in particular, you saw it on display. I mean, you see it on display every week, but the combination of strength and elusiveness is very rare and very, and it sets a floor for him where, again, going kind of treetops, he doesn't need to have an 80% completion percentage every week because the floor is so high because of his running. But I think what you said is really what nails it, which is what we needed to see, which is can he hit those in-breaking routes, you know, against defenses that play middle of the field open like the Vikings do? He could not last year. Mm-hmm. He looked sensational doing it in this game. I mean, this is why they go out and get A.J. Brown, who's the king of the deep dig, right? But I was surprised by Minnesota. I mean, to some extent, not surprised, because we know this is a Vic Fangio-style defense. Ed Donatello is a defensive coordinator. We expect them to play, you know, a lot of split safety. I think, you know, a lot of cover two, cover four, whatever quarter quarters has. But I didn't expect them to, like, just sit back. And basically, They gave Philadelphia light boxes all game long, and I don't understand why you would do that against the Eagles. And the Eagles were delighted to see those light boxes. Miles Sanders ran 88% of his carries were into boxes, light boxes meaning six or fewer defenders, and he averaged 5.3 yards a carry for a 60% success rate. At a certain point, like, it's just not working. And then to your point about the blitz, that's my thinking. Like, watching Tampa last year, you want to muddy the picture for him and send, you know, different pressures, and they didn't do that either.
Even if you did not have that in your game plan, when he's 8 for 8,
yeah,
you better go find something else. Like, I don't know if you don't have it called, but you better make something up. Just send a corner, send anybody. You got to try something different when it's not working. And I think that generally people assume that a light box means that you should be able to run on it. I think, like, depending on how you coach your safeties in cover four, you can still be an aggressive run stuffing defense with safeties who read run quickly. So I don't hate that they had middle field open, but I hate the way they had it open. Like, they were not playing aggressive. You watch the all 22, even when they're like behind and you would expect the Eagles to be running the clock out, they still were playing like cover six, which is, you mentioned earlier, quarter, half, with the quarter player not even playing aggressive in the box. And I mean, it didn't make sense to me for a team that I really liked what they did scheme-wise offensively last week, and I was high on this team because of that. But this looked like an entirely – like, that team looked smart. This team looked dumb, you know? Yeah. It looked dumb, and Kirk Cousins looked bad. It just was a gross game, and I guess you could say the Eagles made them look that way.
Well, and I would actually say the other side of the ball is what surprised me more, because I kind of thought the Eagles would be able to run on Minnesota, and I had a feeling like, this is the thing about week two. You don't really know what to take away from week one. Right. It's like, yeah, they shut down the Packers offense, but can anyone shut down the Packers offense? How hard is it really? You know, what does this mean? But I thought that Dalvin Cook, the combination of Dalvin Cook and Justin Jefferson, that they would be able to give the Eagles defense, who we just saw get run all over by the Lions, who might be the most devastating rushing attack in the history of Atlanta, all sorts of fits. And they absolutely obliterated them. And some of that is nighttime Kirk Cousins, which actually I want to talk to you about in a second and get your theories on. But a couple things jumped out to me. So Eagles fans hate's a strong word. They're very critical of their defensive coordinator, Jonathan Gannon, who got like head coaching job interviews last year, and everybody was very confused by. He plays like a very soft zone. It is a very boring style of defense to watch. But in this game, Dominic, he mixed it up.
Yeah.
You know, the Eagles, I tweeted this out, were phenomenal in man coverage. People took it as Kirk Cousins slander. I meant it as Eagles praise. And it wasn't just Darius Slay who shut down Justin Jefferson. I thought numerous Eagles defenders were incredible in man. I was curious. They played cover two man on 11% of dropbacks, which is not a ton, but they never played it last year. They blitzed. They brought the house a few times. Like, it felt like Gannon went into this game with a willingness to do what we just said the Vikings defense would not do, which is actually adapt his defense to what they were facing.
Yeah, when you have a primetime game, that is when you have to answer all your critics. That's when you break everything out. That's when you do all the stuff that people say you can't do, and you make sure that everyone sees you put people on notice. The Bills got the assignment in two primetime games. It seems like the Eagles understood the assignment after their, I think, I was going to say embarrassing performance against the Lions, but the Lions, I mean, they might be good after their narrow win over the Lions. And they came out and I mean, Jalen Hurts certainly understood the assignment. They came out, and every question you had about Jalen Hurts, he answered it last night. It was incredible. It was more than anyone could have expected, and he seemed like he expected it. But, yeah, that defense has guys on it. When you have as many guys on the defense as they have, there's no reason to sit back in zones. There's no reason to be soft. You got Bradberry and Slay. They both are comfortable in man coverage. They have pass rushers in. Yeah, I mean, the team is loaded, and they're like veterans. It's not even like they're working in a bunch of young guys. There really is no good reason to not be multiple on defense.
They also had no problem with Dalvin Cook, which I actually thought maybe they'll game plan for Jefferson, but they'll get him with Cook, especially again after watching the aforementioned Lions beatdown. But you know, they changed it up a little bit up front. You know, I noticed Jordan Davis was playing a little bit more on early downs. We'll see how much he gets used. I'm sure there are Eagles fans monitoring his snap count very closely to see, you know, the impact that he has on the running game. But yeah, I don't know. I come out of this feeling, again, like not wanting to overreact, but like you said, you can consider competition. At this point, it's very hard to, I think, weigh what competition means. But you can also just watch the players in front of you, and you see Jalen Hurts making plays. You see Darius Slay looking like an elite shutdown corner, and it's hard not to walk away feeling like incredibly confident in this team. I do think, and this is, I do want to ask you about this, primetime Kirk Cousins is a thing. I don't, like, what is your theory about it?
I don't know. I've always been someone who, like, would reject this because it doesn't marry with anything that feels factual. But what are we at now? 2-10 on Monday night?
Also, just watch.
Yeah.
Forget the record. Just watch.
Yeah.
It's
so, like, okay, it's a thing. But what is a theory that I could say to somebody and not feel like a fool? Is past his bedtime? No. He gets nervous at nighttime or in primetime games?
In front of a big audience? That's totally plausible.
He's been in the league forever. Like, I don't know. That to me seems he's a vampire. Oh, I guess he would play better at night if he was a vampire.
Yeah.
What are the mythical creatures that can't be out at night? Fairies? Are there any mythical creatures that can't be out at night?
I mean, maybe on a weekday.
Maybe it's werewolves. He's like a full moon. Except Teen Wolf was really good at basketball, though.
It feels psychological. I don't want to be like an armchair psychologist.
I'm with you. I don't have any explanation either, but that sounds...
There's no other explanation.
It sounds dumb, and you know it, Mina.
We have a big enough sample size at this
point.
And you know what,
night.
Dominique? The state. I don't know, to your point about, like, he's been in the league for a while, you know? I've been on TV for a while now, and I still get nervous when I know that there's more people watching when it's a bigger spotlight.
That's not true.
You just don't see it because I'm not like Kirk Cousins. I just get nervous.
You are TV clutch. I like that.
I'm not trying to blow up her spot, and maybe this is a good point to transition to the Bills. My mom just texted me, Diggs is cute.
He is.
He was on First Take today. I want to say the Vikings. I don't want to leave the Vikings a second. You know, so I think it sounds like we're both very high on the Eagles and what we saw from them. Does this, like, kill for you the Vikings could be Rams North?
Yeah.
This is an actual contender for the NFC North kind of thing?
No, it doesn't kill it. It was so alive last week. But it doesn't kill it. It's second week, new coaching staff. Rams North, I guess the Kirk Cousins might hurt that, but they made the Super Bowl with Goff, so you got that for you. He's better than Jared Goff. Well, maybe he used to be, at least.
Jared Goff had one of the best primetime performances I've ever against the Minnesota Vikings.
That. Kirk Cousins went off in that game too. They both had a bunch of touchdowns, didn't they? That was like
my narratives.
Don't get your narratives crisscrossed.
That was an incredible game. It was in LA.
So fun. They were both throwing deep dimes, but I don't know. I give me another week or two to figure out how I feel about this team. Maybe they'll learn from this and get better. If we're rating on the Hackett scale, this was an outstanding game for a second head coach job. He was great.
There were no, like, clock, like, snafus.
Yeah, there was nothing big and embarrassing. They just had a bad game plan.
Where does the word snafu come from?
I don't know.
It sounds like snafu. It's North American. It's an acronym?
Oh, wow. I didn't know
Whoa, I had no idea. It's situation normal.
All effed up.
Wow. It's military slang.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
News to us. Didn't know he's sneaking in cusses.
Wow. Okay. Gonna use that more. Okay, there were no snafus to be seen in Orchard Park where I was. By the way, it was bananas there.
No, that was one big snafu. That was a normal situation, which is also all effed up. Like all of Orchard Park, everything I see, people getting ketchup and mayonnaise poured on their face and body slammed through tables.
Oh God, we were right there, Marcus and I. They sent us out to watch that dude. Pinto Ron is his name. First of all, his name's not even Ron; it's Ken. And I and the origin story of it is just that, like, one of his brothers squirted mustard on him once, and they decided to make it thing. It wasn't, there's not, like, a really cool origin story. Oh, I will say, so we were standing in the crowd. I know we'll get to the, I promise we'll get to the game soon, people. We were standing in the crowd, and I did zero research into it before, because I was busy talking about football for our show. So they said, just go out there. He's going to come out at some point. I did no research. So we're standing there, and it's, like, old, confused looking man kind of walks up to me and like tries to hand me a hamburger, and I'm like, what the hell is happening here? And like, I was like looking at security like, what the, can we, like, and then he goes past me, and that was Pinto Ron. And I was so worried. They kept being like, back up, you're gonna get hit. And I didn't, but we came perilously close to being hit by the mustard.
Yeah, I don't know, I have so many questions, but I don't think you have any answers, so we can talk about the football game.
I had so many jokes too that I couldn't say on television about it.
Yeah, I could see a couple of them.
Yeah, it's not hard. Okay. All right. Speaking of throwing mustard, Josh Allen.
Oh yeah, a lot of mustard.
Don't think we learned anything new.
I mean, like, he puts mustard on the ball because you throw it.
That's right.
I just did the same thing you did, just heavy-handed and sloppy.
Just spelled it out, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I mean, not all your listeners are that smart. Some of them need it spelled out. You're welcome, slow listeners.
Speaking of heavy-handed and sloppy, the Titans. First of all, I don't think we learned anything about the Bills. Although I will say, it is remarkable how easy they made that look despite losing players right and left as the game was going on. Like, I think it's, you know, you can walk away from that and being like, of course they stomped the Titans, who also, by the way, had a lot of players out, it should be noted. But, you know, not only were they down Gabe Davis, they were losing defensive players as the game went on. Obviously, that really scary injury
Oliver
to Gabe Jackson.
Play.
Oliver didn't play. Tim Settle didn't play. So there was a thing, oh, maybe the Titans would be able to run the ball on them. They lost Matt Milano at one point. Mike Hyde went out at one point. So we'll talk about what that means for the future. But in this particular game, you know, this, I don't think the Titans are very good, but the Bills have had, like, a lot of role players become key contributors, whether it's, you know, the rookie Christian Benford, who's playing corner, or a guy like Jordan Phillips, who is, like, a star now in that defense. It's pretty remarkable. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, the pressure, we haven't learned a lot about them because no one's put any pressure on them. You're right, we should still commend them because they're beating down teams that they should beat down. And they're dealing with adversity. I think you can put, I guess you, some people would argue that they shouldn't have beaten down the Rams. I don't think the Rams are that good. That's just me. You could argue about the, or you could say, I guess if you were looking to discredit them by pointing to the injuries, you can point to the Ravens, who had a ton of injuries and were not able to put a team away that they seemed like they were better than. That's not easy to do. So they still dominated that game. And the reason why I bring up the Ravens is because they also feel like a team that's kind of built in a complementary way, and that the Bills are going to score a lot of points and they're going to score them early. And their defense is constructed to let Von Miller eat and also stay in too high coverage, which if they get a big enough lead, they don't have to worry about getting pulled out of it. That's the fear for the Bills, in my view. I think I talked about this on the first episode that we did together. Was the real thing that the Bills do not want to see is a team that can run the ball on them and force them to take a safety and add him to the box.
Yeah.
Because then guys like Benford will be exposed on the edge. They really haven't had to do that yet. Those guys are comfortable in two-man and other variations of cover two, and they have not been challenged yet. So if someone can stop Josh Allen from scoring on an opening drive, which I don't know if they can, or at least score with them, and then effectively run the ball against their front seven, we'll find out. And then maybe they'll hold off until they get to Trey when he gets healthy again.
They might, actually. Yeah. You're right, because I think he might be back for the Ravens game, but are the Ravens even a good running team anymore? I don't know. I kind of don't think so. Yeah. And certainly the Titans are not. I think that was the thinking going into this was like, okay, well, now it's Derrick Henry's coming to town, you know, and you don't have your defensive tackles, but I just don't think the Titans are a good running team anymore. I'm really not sure what they're good at. The Bills, you know, pretty relentlessly attacked all of their young cornerbacks. Like, as banged up as the Bills are at corner, the Titans are equally inexperienced. And, you know, like, you got Jake Kumerow beating you over the top for, you know, a deep ball. Like, it's not going well for Tennessee. I have a quick question about the Titans, and then I want to get back to the Bills. Malik Willis came into this game. I know it's week two, but at some point, one thing I like about the Titans and what they've done is I think we talked about this on this podcast. They know they're not great, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, if they thought they were great, they would have paid AJ Brown. I believe that. And they would have, you know, restructured Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill's contracts. It's over after this year.
Yeah.
You know, Tannehill's gone. At a certain point this season, I think maybe earlier than we thought, do you consider just going to Willis and seeing what you got, or do you ride this out with Tannehill?
I think at a certain point they're going to go to Willis to see what you got. But I think if we've learned anything in these past couple of weeks, particularly last night with Jalen Hurts, is you don't really know what you got if you put a guy out there in a bad situation. Like, Jalen Hurts is balling in a good situation. I guess you might find out something about Malik Willis, but I don't know how fair it is to put him out there and say, let's see what we got. When Taylor Lewan went down yesterday, there's not a true number one. And Derrick Henry is, if nothing else, on the downslope. It seems like you're not going to get a true look at what Malik Willis can be. But he's a third-round pick, so I don't think they have a bunch invested in him anyway.
You're probably right. Man, AFC South.
It's a bad sitch.
Woof. We'll get to the woofs later, but woof. Okay, the one thing I want to finish with is, so I did mention all those injuries. So, you know, I assume Dane Jackson is not going to play this coming week. Tre'Davious White is not back yet. We'll see. I think Hyde, Milano, and Phillips' injuries were all pretty minor, but it is a short week, and you are now facing the track team that is the Miami Dolphins. Good timing with you giving them a winner's pick last week, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm going to preview this game in depth later in the week, so you don't need to get too far into it. But are you concerned that they're heading into that particular matchup? Just the defense versus the offense, not on the other side of the ball, given that they're, you know, a few men down.
Yeah. The Bills defense. I am concerned. I guess this is when we'll find out how good McDaniel's run coordination actually is. Because if he is able to coordinate some runs in this game that do what I've been talking about someone needs to do to the Bills all along, is actually be an effective running attack. No one in the league has two corners. I guess maybe the Eagles are the closest team that has two corners that can cover them, and I don't think that they can either, honestly, can cover Waddle and Tyreek Hill. If they get in a situation where they're asking Benford to cover Tyreek Hill, then we got a problem in that Miami Heat. So that's what it's going to come down to, is how they're going to address, how they're going to defend those guys, and if Miami wants to get Gesicki involved in the middle of the field, if they double both of them, but I suspect they'll do a lot of two-man, which, I mean, that's not going to completely cure what ails them, because Tyreek Hill can still run across the field faster than your underneath coverage can.
It is notable. I know I said I'm not going to talk about this too much. The Dolphins haven't faced, like, a legit pass rush yet.
Yeah, That's true.
The Ravens, we talked a lot about the secondary and all their mistakes. Holy smokes, that pass rush was non-existent.
Yeah.
The Bills' pass rush is existent, so that should be very interesting. All right, let's take a quick break and come back, and then we'll pick our winners and woofs.
Okay.
All right, people, we are brought to you by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. See, it's not just about the daily promos, odds boosts, or the hundreds of ways to wager. It's about the immortal words of Caesar himself. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Every bet you place on the app, no matter the outcome, earns towards exclusive perks at Caesars Rewards destinations everywhere. Hotel stays, concert tickets, bonuses, and more. Download the Caesars Sportsbook app, become a Caesars Rewards member today, and get more with every wager. Must be 21 years or older to gamble. Gambling problem? Call or text 1-800-522-4700. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th, one-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Let's start with the winners, though. Who's your winner?
Winner first is Joe Flacco. That's my number one winner. What do you have, 4 touchdowns? 4 touchdown passes, 307 yards, and 2 of those touchdowns came in the last 90 seconds for an improbable win. It reminded me of that big playoff win that he had in Denver when he hit that deep shot. I guess they don't call it the Mile High Miracle in anywhere other than in like Joe Flacco's house, but that that was an incredible play. And it reminded me of that. He hit that deep pass that shouldn't have been hit, and that was a big game. Big win for the Jets. I guess Garrett Wilson should qualify as a winner, too.
Yeah, I would say that's the big winner. I'll allow Joe Flacco.
I just felt like Joe Flacco is he's not going to have too many more weeks of winners. And Garrett Wilson feels like he's going to have a lot more weeks. He had 102, 8 receptions. He's a true number one, it appears. And Joe Flacco and Garrett Wilson, we'll put them together. They can double win.
I was watching this one with Steve Levy, who's a big Jets fan, and in Buffalo, he was there to do Monday Night Football. And it like still amazes me that Jets fans care so much. This is I loved it. It got me into the game because he was so into the game. But it's like you're the Jets. It's Joe Flacco. You're playing the Browns. And he was like living and dying by each throw. And when Joe hit those big time, you know, he can hit explosive deep balls really well. he went nuts. It's intermittent.
Yeah.
It's not predictable. There's no consistency to it. He went nuts. Garrett Wilson to me was a revelation though in this game. I mean, that one, the release he had on his touchdown was so nasty. I think he's going to be good for a long time. I will say, I don't think this is going to make a bad comparison. Or like, let me rephrase this. I don't think it's going to make it any awkward for Zach Wilson because Joe Flacco won't play good enough for that to be an issue, I think. But you know, it's useful for the Jets to see someone succeed in the offense, I think, separately from Zach.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think Joe Flacco is going to be a problem for the development of Zach. I guess there could be plenty of other problems for Zach's development, but I think it's nice to see that Garrett, we know what Garrett Wilson is. Let's stick on the positive, because I'm not sure that the Zach Wilson conversation, we have much positive to hang on right now. These are the winners. And Garrett Wilson was the one right after the draft whose dad made that really like sweet video, right?
Yeah.
I was rooting for Garrett Wilson. He seems like a good kid. He played really well, or he didn't put up big numbers against the Ravens, but he played really well in that first game against the Ravens, so much so that I was like, oh, let's see what this guy can do. And yeah, he's living up to it. And there are too many good receivers in the NFL.
There really are. I was thinking the class so far. So you've got Drake London, who I think looks good early on in Atlanta. Even Treylon Burks, who had the disastrous summer, has actually shown me some things through the first 2 weeks. I don't think, you know, he's not A.J. Brown, obviously, but they've gotten him involved pretty much always on the exact same route, which is like a intermediate crosser, like a blood concept. But it's always off of play action. And then who else is there? Who are the guys drafted? Oh, Jahan Dotson has been freaking awesome in Washington. Yeah. The class is already...
The Saints guy. What's the Saints guy? Ohio State guy?
Olave. Yeah. They all look good.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same from a couple years ago. And, like, they're just... I guess I don't want to say it's, like, the rule changes, because it's not just that it gets easier and easier to pass. These guys are just explosive and special. And it feels unfair, but we're moving in a direction where it feels like you have to have a couple of really good receivers more than just like a number one. That's not enough anymore. So
yeah,
it's looking like there's going to be enough guys in the league for that to be the case. And I guess the running backs are not getting paid already, so that's where that money will come from.
I mean, it is interesting though, because we, you know, with all the wide receiver movement all summer, the question was, can you really trust, like, is Justin Jefferson an aberration? Ja'Marr Chase an aberration? Is it stupid for teams to move on from like an A.J. Brown type and draft a receiver? And I don't think it's always a good decision. I think if Tennessee was competitive, they should have kept A.J. Brown.
Right.
But we are seeing the very high hit rate appears to be continuing, and that is not going away anytime soon, which I think is is going to change the way teams build their rosters for a long time. Okay, my winner is San Francisco. Not obviously at quarterback. I'm very sad about that. I'm really sad for Trey.
Yeah, it sucks.
Because this is really, like, puts him behind the eight ball. I mean, to have, like, so little experience and then lose another year of development is just brutal. While watching them play demolish Seattle, it felt like I was watching the Niners from last fall, not because of Jimmy Garoppolo, but because of the defense. And it was week one, they had all those penalties against Chicago, so it kind of, they were just very self-defeating. They cleaned that up, and it was just a reminder of what we kind of knew headed into the season, which is this should be one of the three or four best defenses in the NFL. The four-man rush is, through first 2 weeks, has the highest pressure rate of any team in the NFL. 44%. They're getting a 44% pressure rate setting four right now.
It's outstanding.
I feel like Nick Bosa is getting a little bit lost in the top pass rushers in the NFL. Today on First Take, Stephen A. called Micah Parsons the second coming of Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah, that's not a new thing. Lots of people have been saying that.
I think Micah Parsons is incredible. But Nick Bosa is, he has the ability to take over games. And then what you're seeing on that defensive line is everyone around him, any time a new defensive lineman or just a defensive lineman is in that defense, they're incredible. Omenihu absolutely destroyed the Seahawks rushing opposite him. And then in the secondary, I think the corners, Mosley and Ward, look good through the first two games. But my biggest question coming into the season was safety, because they didn't have safeties. And that dude, Talanoa Hufanga, looks like the truth.
Yeah.
He was all over the field versus Seattle.
They were going to have to be good on defense no matter who was at quarterback this season to, like, survive and stay competitive, at least to buy Trey Lance some time to get right. Now, Jimmy G does not need time to get right. Jimmy G is who he is, which means the defense is going to have to be good. And so it's nice for them to show this. They are, their like ceiling comes down and their floor comes up. They could find their way the same place they've been the last several years in competitive spots, especially because that front is a problem for anybody. And the NFC is, there's nobody running away with it. So they needed that last week, or they needed that on Sunday, and they found it.
Do you feel like, not to be too big picture or predictive, but do you feel like with this change going from back to Garoppolo, like with Trey, they were both, this is how I feel. With Trey Lance, they were less likely to make it to the Super Bowl and more likely to win once they got there.
Yeah. That's right? A ridiculous thing to say, but it makes sense to me because I agree. Yeah. It does feel like,
especially looking at these AFC teams.
Right. Yeah.
Like through the NFC. When you look at the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Bills.
Right. Their defense as good as it, or their defensive front as good as it is, the way the game is refereed these days, you're not going to defense your way past any of those quarterbacks on the other side. So you're going to need somebody who has the capability to go completely off, which Jimmy Garoppolo does not have. And we don't know if Trey Lance has it. And so I think that's what this season was going to be about. How good can Trey Lance get in a short period of time? Because their championship window is starting to close, as we see by how their offensive line has started to deteriorate. So I'm sure that they feel confident in what they have with Jimmy Garoppolo, but we'll see if they find themselves in the playoffs. Yeah, I mean, they, I'm going to have to beat this dead horse, but like last year, Jimmy was bad in the playoffs, and they managed to win in spite of Jimmy. That's not going to work another year in a row. So we'll see.
I think also the offensive line issues are going to show up against teams that are better than Seattle rushing the passer. So it's not a good measuring stick.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy? Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, give me your wolf.
My wolf is your beloved Matt Ryan.
Oh.
I love Matt Ryan too, because
he
was a rookie when I got traded down there. He played really well, and that helped me play really well. So I hate to see what's happening with him right now, but the Colts thought they got rid of those Carson Wentz passes. They did not. They are still there. The like inexplicable, like throw directly to a linebacker or like a lollipop to the sideline turnover. That's what this game was. It was so wincy and, well, without the highs. Like at least in most Wentz games, you'll have like an incredible Wentz throw followed by some weird ones. They just got the weird ones.
Yeah.
They're cursed.
They're not cursed. They're just worse than we all thought in every way. Honestly,
but the only reason why I say everywhere that they're cursed is because, and I mean, I'm joking. They're not cursed. I don't believe in curses, but Matt Ryan's not this bad.
The Chargers are kind of cursed.
Yeah. Matt Ryan's not this bad. He's really bad right now. And he just fell off a cliff, I guess. Or maybe it's just early to figure out they're not running the ball right?
I mean, everything around him is bad, which is not to say that he's playing well. I am not. I have seen it. I, as a Matt Ryan stan, it hurts my heart to say. Yeah. And I'm not, like, making excuses for him, but the situation sucks. Yeah. And I think the thinking with Indianapolis was always like, oh, all they need is a quarterback and he can walk in and it can be like an aging guy, like a, you know, aging Philip Rivers or aging Matt Ryan, and the line is so good. But the line is not good. The skill players are not good. Nothing's good right now. There's no pass rush, which it's like the positions that they're good at are not ones that are like super valuable in the NFL right now. And they don't even have Shaq Leonard, yep. Obviously, which has been huge, I think, for them. So
he's the difference maker on their defense. He's like the guy that is special enough to allow everything else to work. And they lost Eberflus, who was their defensive coordinator, which we often talk about how offenses can recover after losing coordinator, not really talk about how defenses are going to adjust. So that's another, like, reason why they could be struggling to bring things together. So I don't know. That whole division, man, I like Jacksonville to win it now, which sounds crazy, but everybody else
not
looks
crazy.
Bad.
It's not crazy. I wish there are all those like worst to first shows. You know, in the off season, we were just trying to find stuff to talk about, and it's like an off season this just in or something. And like the producer's like, who's likely to go worst to first? I wish I had picked Jackson. Or you know what? No, I wish I'd picked them not for the worst to first because that was the Ravens. Who's this year's Bengals?
Yeah, I did pick them for this year's Bengals, so I got that on my under my belt. Worst of first, Ravens is a cop-out. You're not allowed to do that. That's, like, not fair. They were, like, number one in football at a certain point last year. They were worse because of fluke stuff. It's not a true worst of first.
It is a totally worst of first. You don't get to make the rules of worst of first.
I mean, the point of worst of first is they go from being bad to being good, not from go from being injured to being healthy. Like, no one's surprised by it. The point of worst of first is like, hey, well, I'm going to shock you with this hot take.
Apparently, the take that a lot of people, just while we're revisiting off-season topics, the take that the Bengals were going to miss the playoffs was not that hot, because your boys, they're not your boys, I don't know why I said that.
Yeah, they're not.
The boys.
Them boys.
Are in trouble.
Yeah, they are in
them
trouble.
Them boys are in trouble.
I also made that pick, by the way, just so you know.
To miss the playoffs?
Mm-hmm. Because I went through there.
Like that's so much more original than the Ravens worst of first. Everybody was saying that.
Nobody
like, numerous
was
people
that.
Came on this. Numerous people came on this podcast and said that. It's fine.
Oh, yeah,
fine.
I know, because I listen every time and read the transcripts.
Listen.
I have a bad memory. Concussions.
Nice. Now I know you don't listen to my podcast. All right.
I do listen to your podcast.
It's the Bengals offense, first of all, because the Bengals defense actually looks totally fine.
Yeah.
good, even. The Bengals offense, what is so befuddling about it, there's a number of things, is it's really not just one thing. You know, there's a lot of hand-wringing correctly about the offensive line. And I will say, this is another thing where we got to remember it's week three, and in weeks one and two, they played two of the best pass rushing groups in the NFL, in Pittsburgh with T.J. Watt and Dallas with Micah Parsons. Right. So extremely, the small sample size thus far has like affected them in a very negative way. But beyond that, Dominic, like one thing I liked about the Bengals coming into this year, part of the reason I thought they would be fine. So, okay. One of the many cases for their regression, other than like injury luck and opponents and all that, was the notion, I think Barnwell talked about this when we previewed the AFC North, that all of those deep throws that were available to Joe Burrow would not be available this season because teams would scheme them away and there would be no easy stuff. Right. And even Joe Burrow himself talked about like, oh, we're probably going to face a lot more cover too. Right. And I heard that, but I thought they would be fine because I thought they'd have the underneath options to run quick game, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, Hayden Hurst, and that they would have an efficient running game. Turns out they can't do even those things right now. So they're not able to get defenses out of those two looks. Dallas played the most Tampa 2 of any team in the NFL this last weekend. Again, shout out to Dan Quinn, the God, for continuously evolving. And they had nothing for it. Nothing. And I don't know, like, what do you attribute that most to watching them?
So, I have no answer for you. It's, I guess, offensive line. So cover two is a coverage that you would call, or a defense that you would call, if you're looking to, like, slow down the pass. Cover two is not a run-stopping defense. Tampa two is even worse, because Tampa two takes... So cover two keeps both of your linebackers out. Tampa two keeps both your safeties out. Tampa two keeps both the safeties out of the run game. And also your middle linebacker has to cheat back to, like, cover the middle of the field. If you can't run against Tampa two, then you are really, really doing something wrong. And
against Dallas, yeah. By the way. Dallas is a terrible run defense, yeah, so I think.
I don't have an answer for why they're so bad or why they can't run the ball. And it's when you have the players that they have, you should not – you also should be able to pass the ball against cover two. Like, they have the talent to be able to effectively attack just about any defense out there. So there is no excuse for them right now. I think Zach Taylor, people were not high on him until his Super Bowl run, and I see why. So I'm not sure what answers he's brought to this situation. And it's not like completely like Kyler Murray, but it feels a lot like Joe Burrow is putting deodorant or had been putting deodorant on some stuff that wasn't very good. And now Joe Burrow's not all that good either. And this team feels like they're in trouble.
The schedule does get easier. They have the Jets.
Easier than Cooper Rush?
I mean, defensively. You got the Jets, or the Dolphins. Who knows if the Ravens are any good.
Yeah.
I do think there's just too much talent for them to not. Right?
Yeah, I think you're right, but I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. There's a lot of talent in this league, and you can be spoiled. That talent can be spoiled. I think the fact that we don't know about the Ravens, I think we do know that the Browns and the Steelers aren't going to be all that competitive. That gives them time. That bodes well for them to figure these things out. Zach Taylor should be able to figure out some way to have this offense be effective with all the talent that they have. So I'm going to lean in your direction. They'll be fine.
Fingers crossed. Prayers up, Bengals fans. Prayers up. All right. Houday. Dominique Foxworth, as always, thank you for joining our show. You can check out Dominique's show, the Dominique Foxworth podcast. You can also check him out on Debatable. You can check me out on Debatable this week if I show up on time. Stay tuned. Thank you for the reviews, by the way. I've been reading them. I appreciate the feedback. We'll be back later this week with Justice Mosqueda previewing a pretty exciting week three.
Seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.